Dr. Dan's Freedom Forum is on the air. Never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. Dr. Dan's Freedom Forum is a call to arms for those American patriots who, in the tradition of our founding fathers, will stand up now to defend the Constitution and the liberties that it guarantees to each citizen, to each of us. That is our mission, to explain in a clear and concise manner the direct effect of each issue on the individual, on you personally, not some anonymous being in a distant place, and to define in no uncertain terms the consequences of inaction. Let the battle begin.
Well, this is Dr. Dan, and we're back with Dwight Moss. And of course, we're welcoming Dwight as a guest on Freedom Forum Radio. Thank you for being here today with me.
I'm glad to be sharing with you.
You know, Dwight was a well-known member of our community. He's a dedicated American patriot, a Marine foot soldier in Vietnam, pastor, chaplain of VFW Post 7807. So what I would like to talk about is your years in the service. I know that some of those were very difficult, that you suffered some wounds, and I'd like to hear about that, because that's a very important part of the history that we need to know about. We talked about your life on a farm growing up. You went to school, of course, and you graduated from high school, I assume. Close to it.
I graduated in the Marine Corps, went back to Tri-County, and then went to DeKalb College later on. So, and then been in school ever since, basically, one way or the other.
So did you enlist in the Marine Corps?
I was subject to the draft, and it was about time for them to draft me, and I went down and enlisted. I tried to get in the Marine Corps at an earlier age, and wasn't able to make it. And then when I realized I was going to be drafted, I just went to the Marines. So that was always in my mind.
So you became a Marine, and let's talk about those experiences. What experience did you have as a Marine, as a young man? You were, how old were you, 18 or 17?
I was 18? 19.
19? Hmm. So that must have been a huge change in life for you.
It was a huge change. I was working at a lumber mill at the time, and I was going to be drafted, so I went down and signed up, and when they kept us up about the whole night, getting gear and all that stuff going in, and by the time we got to lay down in our cot the next night, I wondered to myself what in the world I got myself into, because it's pretty dramatic change. The physical part wasn't that bad, because just from being a farm boy, from working with lumber, and I stayed in pretty good shape. And so it wasn't really that much of a challenge, but it was for some, you know. But I had my 20th birthday in boot camp and my 21st birthday in Vietnam. I mean, that's how quickly, as soon as I went through the training, through boot camp, and then infantry training. We had a short pause. We got to go home for 30 days, and then we went into jungle warfare training. And after jungle warfare training, we were finished.
Well, this is Dr. Dan, and we're back with Dwight Moss. And of course, we're welcoming Dwight as a guest on Freedom Forum Radio. Thank you for being here today with me.
I'm glad to be sharing with you.
What was it like? I mean, that must have been what we would call culture shock. One minute you're here, the good old U.S. of A., and the next thing you're in the jungles of Southeast Asia.
Yeah, I kind of expected it. I knew what was going on. I knew what I was getting into. One thing I remember is flying low over the waters. You could just about dive out of the plane. It was so low getting into Vietnam. And I guess they kept below radar. I don't know what there. But acclimating to Vietnam and the temperatures was a process that we did. And And then most of my time was spent on outposts, on patrols, and night ambush settings. And a little bit of time on the DMZ, the demilitarized zone. That's the line we're not supposed to cross at that time.
What exactly was your duty when you were in Vietnam? What did you do?
Patrolled.
Patrols?
I patrolled.
Were you part of the long-range recon patrols?
Not exactly. We were just daily patrols, overnight ambush patrols, sometimes a two-day patrol. And then sometimes we'd be on a sweep. Usually those patrols were, like the nighttime especially, were like a squad, three, four-man teams plus support, and plus sometimes a corpsman. Sometimes we didn't get a corpsman for a small group. We were constantly patrolling. And our biggest issue where I was most of the time was snipers. And so that's what we tried to learn to dodge if we possibly could. But we had big sweeps at times where we'd be part of other groups that come in and we'd cover a lot of territory.
So you were on patrol. Being exposed to those kind of risks was new. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I can remember the first mortar barrage when we had a tank broken down, and I realized how fast I could get to the ground, because when those mortars started exploding, you get low quickly. But we done a lot of patrols. I had three near deaths, and I'm not talking about bullets whizzing by, because I can remember when the bullets came so close you could hear them sizzling through the air. Now, that's a unique experience that I don't care about, but it's a fact. If you're there and the bullets are close enough, you'll hear them traveling.
So you were wounded.
Eventually, that was actually my third near death. I almost drowned one time trying to cross a river. Backpack, grenades, ammunition, metal helmet, a backpack, rifle, and you're trying to find a crossing, and suddenly you go in just a step and you're gone. And I was dead then. I knew that. I knew I wouldn't come back, because I'd gone up about three times, and I knew I was going down for the last time. And it was a unique feeling. There's nothing you can do about it, though. When death comes, it's coming, you know, and you realize that. And it makes you appreciate life, though.
But you're sitting here now, so.
Well, a gentleman, I call him my angel. I don't know where he came from. I didn't see him after that, but he locked arms with the guys that were there near me. But he instigated it, evidently. And I figured I was gone. I felt faintly someone touch my hand. And I didn't resist. I didn't do anything but relax. And then they pulled me in. And yes, I'm sitting here today. Thanks to probably that one man and those men who helped him. Yeah.
What else happened to you in Vietnam?
You mean as far as injuries? Or?
Sure.
Well, the biggest thing, I was on the DMZ when we were patrolling out there, and that's where we witnessed the most deaths. I had deaths, men shot in front of me, men shot behind me, you know, and things of that nature. But at the DMZ, there was just a lot going on, and we lost an entire squad of about 15 men. They ran into the bushes, and we never did see them alive again. We were hunkered down in the craters where bombs had evidently made them, and we got ran out of water. And eventually, I scurried out of my position to go over to a mud hole and fill up my canteen. I put the tablets in it. It's supposed to protect you so you can drink about anything. And, we were drinking muck. I mean, it was, you wanted to settle, but men came rushing by us, we seen them later, but we never seen them alive. We loaded up about 15 bodies that had been in the sun two or three days. I don't remember if it's two or three, and some helicopter victims that were burned to a crisp, and then others that. Well, one man, I seen him jump out of the helicopter on the way down. Of course, he didn't survive his body landing, hitting the earth, and that's probably the most devastating. I've got a memory in my mind, and I told my wife once, it touches you. In so many different ways. I remember a man, we went in to get, and pick up the bodies, and the gunny sergeant sticks in my mind, because his body was in one place and about, six, maybe 10 feet further away were his brains in a very neat pile. Top of his head was removed. I'm sure he got shot by a bullet, you know, that evidently just knocked the top of his head off. And those brains were just almost perfect. It's like they landed and, and, you know, I hate to say this, but it reminds me of a chicken. You cut its head off and it flops around. Well, he probably moved around after he was hit. and then his brains wound up one place and another. But we carried a lot of bodies out, and I got, I was getting weak. I thought it was a, the stench or the, or what was going on. And, I told the corpsman, he said, "Can you wait a while?" I said, "Yeah, I can wait." And then I waited a long time. We cleaned up there. They sent us some provisions, and we actually shaved before we headed back, but it was a few days to get back to the main camp. And, all thing I was doing was drinking. I could not eat. And this is the next experience. We got back to the main base, and, man, they had a good seafood gumbo cooked up for us out there, and you could see it. I got me a plate full of that in my mess cap, the one I carried around with me most of the time. And I couldn't swallow it. Just took a bite and couldn't swallow it. And I could, that's the way it had been. I couldn't swallow the food. And finally, after we had, went a long march, and all I was doing was drinking, and I sat down by a fence somewhere, and finally I told someone, I said, "Man, I need some help." And when they took me in, my temperature was 106.2, and I was wasting. It's amazing how much weight I lost in a few weeks. I mean, looked like a rail. They packed me in ice. I didn't move. You know, most of the time you'll cringe or something. Put me in front of an air conditioner. I didn't move. I didn't wiggle. I guess I was worse shape than I thought. But I had walked to that point. I was able to get there. And I remember seeing another guy come in, and I knew him. And he'd get up off the air conditioned table because they put you right in front of a cooler in order to get your body temperature down, you know. And I thought, well, he's not too bad off. He's getting up. But there was some point in there, and it's pretty dramatic, and people can believe it or not believe it, but it's my life. Not about me. It's about life and what people suffer, other people suffer. But I remember being in the top of the tent, and I could see my body, a unique experience. And this has helped me in the ministry work later, because I thought, how am I thinking? You know, I've discovered that I believe, and I do believe, you have a mind and a spirit beyond this body. But I traveled and came all the way to Shooting Creek, North Carolina. Had to be in spirit because I didn't get in the house. I went to my mom's house, but I never did get in. I got to the porch, and somehow or other I got back. And I survived. I survived the malaria, and they kept me for a while. I remember I got more needles poked in my arms than I ever had in my life because these guys weren't astute at taking blood and had to do it every day. They were checking for something. I don't know. They knew what they were doing. But I got back. They fed us good. I got my strength back. Of course, I was doing push-ups as soon as I could. I mean, I always did that, push-ups and squats, even holding onto a sink. You know, it's just a thing with me. But eventually got back. I got back in, got with my group and all that, and began doing the patrols, you know, that I've been doing before all over again. Of course, there's a lot I could tell you, and I can't tell you everything because we'd be here till tomorrow morning. But we were in a sniper area, as I mentioned earlier, and I learned to dodge. I would walk uneven paces out on patrol. I'd back up even and go forward. Because I didn't know. That's how they were getting us one at a time, now and then. And I really resent the politicians when I look back at that war. We could have won that in a few weeks, but they let us die one by one. And I firmly believe it was a political war, and it didn't accomplish anything. And that's sad, because a lot of men gave their life. You know, but I fought for myself and my buddies. But they moved us, you know, out of that sniper area, and we've been there a long time. It was like home. I mean, to go on a light part of this, me and Tony is a good friend of mine. We'd get some wild peppers, and they probably wasn't wild. They were probably left by some of the villagers that had moved out and left their homes. But we would put them in a metal helmet along with the sea rations we didn't like. Time we got done with it was pretty good to eat based on, you know, for outdoors. And I enjoyed that. I mean, that was warmth and comfort, and with your men, you know, that was you were bonded because you didn't know if they're going to be there tomorrow or not. You know that, and that was a fact. It wasn't speculation. That was a fact. And then they moved us to an area And we started discovering a lot of landmines. And for some reason, I had two green people working with me. And the lieutenant said, take your men and check out those huts. Of course, we've been blowing up mines all over the place. I'd used my grenades and some of my men's grenades because they didn't have the experience. What happened that I visualized and seen, the new men got killed first. They were just didn't have it together or wasn't, I guess they weren't, didn't have survival instincts, maybe. I'm not sure. But we would lose new men more quickly than the established, the people that had been there for a little while. But he said, go check out that hut. And I told the guys I had every right to send them first. I've done my part of going first, but I've been on the point many times. But to stick with this one story, I told the men, I said, you stay back maybe 15 meters or so and keep spread out, and I'll go take the point. And we were looking for some sniper. I was geared for snipers, and I had my safety off. My finger was on the trigger, and I was looking at doors and windows. I was approaching a hut. I was not looking down because I was looking for someone to stick his head out and shoot at me is what I was looking at. All of a sudden, though, I didn't hear a thing. I knew something happened, and I could see that my chest was opened up, and I figured I'd been shot because we'd lost a guy. I'm not too many weeks ahead of that. He got shot in the chest, and to pause and tell that story briefly and come back, I would like to do that. This boy was named Jerry, and Tony was there with us, and this is a time that we were to go across a rice paddy. I'd already had one man shot, wounded, but thank God he was just wounded, taken out. But he said, take your men across the rice paddy. I knew the snipers were there. Anybody with any common sense knew they were there. And I knew that they were going to be watching us. And I told Tony and I told Jerry, I said, I'll go first, okay? Because we had packs on. And I can remember running that rice paddy. I wanted them to come, not close to me, but keep a little distance. I couldn't feel anything. I mean, there was water in that rice paddy. You'd think you'd be slow, but I wasn't slow because your adrenaline is up. You know, death is awaiting you is what it amounts to. But I got to the other side and dove right down behind the dike. And here come Tony, dove right down below me, behind the dike. Here comes Jerry, and he came up to me. It's like I cursed at him, but I didn't. I said, get the blank down. He got shot right then. Instinct or something was missing. I don't know why. He was supposed to run across and dive down below the dike, and he would have made it. So in an instant, you can be dead. He didn't live, but I don't know that he lived any time at all. He moaned, and then he was silent. And so we loaded his body up. And so show you how it is in combat. We took his food. We took his water. We took his ammunition, and we carried that with us and loaded his body up. And then we went on. Yeah, I'll get back to where I was at, and I was on this patrol where there were a lot of landmines, and I mentioned that I looked down and my chest was opened up, and I didn't know what had happened exactly, and I thought I was shot. I mean, because I'd seen Jerry shot like that, his chest, and I thought, well, I've been shot, but nobody came quickly, and I finally said, I need some help, and I went down to the ground. I mean, I was on my way down anyway. Wasn't going to stand up, because it turned out I was injured from the foot to the throat. My throat was cut, esophagus was cut, I had a hold under my arm, 50-some scars in my legs. I mean, they chopped up pretty good. I mean, they came back. I mean, I do have some nerve damage that didn't regenerate completely. But I've learned to deal with it and stay fit. And I remember asking the corpsman to clean I had gum and blood and no telling what lodged in my throat. And I guess I was feeling that esophagus and didn't know what it was. But I was tore up pretty good. I remember going blind, laying there. In Vietnam, laying on the ground. I didn't have enough blood for my eyes to function. And I figured out, this is it. You're dying. You know, this. And, you know, I don't remember being overly concerned because death's coming at us, and it's unrelenting. I mean, and we know that. Well, all of us know that. If we don't, I don't know where we're living because death comes at us and there's no stopping it. But what they did, they elevated my legs. I said, look, I can't see. And I did get my eyesight back. And I didn't know how bad I was chopped up. But I was bad enough for them to send two officers to my mom's house, and I've learned how devastating that is for families. My brother told me years later, after I came home, years later, he said, what it's like at the house. And you know what? It's like someone knocks on your door. What's behind that door? Terror. When you see two officers, when you open the door. And every person from in Afghanistan that was killed, the family had a knock on the door. And it bothers me when our military is defunct and doesn't know what to do or how to do or unwilling to do the right thing for the soldiers, because I think they have no feeling for the lower man, for the men out here in the streets, or most of us, really.
And that concludes another episode of Dr. Dan's Freedom Forum. Join the battle on our website, www.drdansfreedomforum.com. The right to own private property that cannot be arbitrarily confiscated by the government is the moral right and constitutional basis for individual freedom.
Everything gonna be all right this morning.